Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, friends, the Republican plan to simplify the tax code is now on the table. We're going to be talking about that. The plan the president proposed yesterday will cut the number of tax brackets from 7 to either 3 or 4. And the plan sets the highest tax bracket at 35%, the lowest at 12%. And all of that is vitally, vitally important. We're going to be discussing that and a whole lot more on the program today. However, something just happened in Washington, D.C., in the United States Capitol building that trumps all of this, and it was the return of Congressman Steve Scalise to the place where he has worked for a number of years, and prior to his being shot on June 14 at that congressional baseball practice, it was the place for which he was known as a strong and aggressive leader. Well, today he returned to the floor to thunderous applause to his fellow Republicans and Democrats standing and giving one of the longest standing ovations I've ever seen. He then took a microphone and the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, said, "For what purpose does the congressman from Louisiana wish to speak?" And he said, "I want to express my thanks to those members that are here who've supported me." And he said several other things. And then, of course, Paul Ryan said, "You have permission to speak for as long as you would like." And then Steve Scalise delivered a stirring, heartfelt thanks to those that have prayed for him. He referenced the fact that God is still a miracle-working God. He talked about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu had contacted him 2 or 3 times by telephone, and then he took some very moving moments to thank Special Agent David Bailey for running into the line of fire on the 14th of June and taking down the shooter along with Special Agent Crystal Griner, who was unable to be in the House chamber today for this stirring event. But folks, all in all, it was an amazing, amazing time. And the reason I bring that up is because we're going to talk with someone who was at a special event on Tuesday that I was able to be a part of that ties into everything that took place just about an hour, 45 minutes ago in the Capitol building. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Dave Kistler. I'm joined today by both Sam Rohrer and Isaac Crockett. And we're going to have a special guest in segment 2 that you will not want to miss to talk about something really no one else in the media has been talking about. And we'll say a little more about that at the conclusion of this segment. But our guest in this segment is my son, Nathan Kistler. He is the director of our Washington, D.C. ministry arm. It's called Hope to the Hill. And on Tuesday of this week, there was a very special event that we were a part of. It was called the Capitol Police Officer of the Year Award. That award has a 30-plus year history. But in the last 10 years, a dear friend and ministry partner of ours has been the one that has overseen this phenomenal event. And we had a chance to be a part of it. I served as chaplain for that event, and my son Nathan sang 2 beautiful renditions, one of the national anthem, and then a beautiful arrangement of God Bless America. But Nate, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be here, guys.
Nate, you have participated in a number of large events in Washington, D.C. since you were a child. And 2 of those events that you've been privileged to be a part of were the last 2 years of the Officer of the Year Award. Having seen it now yourself 3 years in a row, what was unique and special about what took place in the Mansfield Room on Tuesday?
Yeah, you know, there's something about tragedy, I think, that brings people together. Obviously, we know that. We've seen that in our country over the past many years. But the past 2 years, we had had officers that we honored who had been involved. Last year, it was 2 officers that had saved another officer who had had a heart attack. And so obviously, it was a wonderful act of heroism and acting in that moment in the right way. But also, I think the amazing thing about this year with the tragedy that had taken place just a few months ago was to honor 2 officers who stood past the line of duty in such a way, and they obviously took bullets themselves. And there's just something about that we really wanted to honor them in a very special way. And the room was full this year. And it's usually we have quite a group of folks every year. This year, the room was absolutely full to capacity. Family members, members of Congress. We had so many folks from the Capitol that came, the chief of police, to honor these two officers. And it was very, very special. You could feel the presence of the Lord as every person that got up to speak shared about how they believed that God was there. A congressman said that it reminded him once again that he believes that angels are all around us in various instances in our lives. So it was quite powerful to have that expression in the Mansfield Room in the United States Capitol. What a privilege it is in the United States to be able to have the freedom to share those things in the United States Capitol.
Well, Nathan, absolutely that is. And I want to ask you more of a personal question on that. I mean, you're there, you saw all of that, but you actually were able to do something that very, very, very few people do, because very, very few people can sing like you did. But you were able to sing the national anthem and God Bless America at that event. Just kind of curious, sure. What's it feel like inside and all when you're able to do that, you're able to sing songs like that and watch people's faces while they're listening? Share a little bit of that.
Absolutely. You know, it's a tremendous sense of pride in the sense of the opportunity to be able to sing our nation's anthem. I had a member of Congress that morning that before we started, I was warming up, and he walked in with his, actually, one of his staffers is Zach Barth, who was shot in the leg. And the congressman was actually wounded from a fall he made on the field that day, diving down the stairs. And he said, you know, the national anthem, he said, I believe that's the hardest song to sing in the world. I said, you know, I probably agree with you, especially when thinking, standing here in front of so many people that I respect so much. It is truly a privilege. You know, the amazing thing, obviously, people stand up when the national anthem is sung. And I'm a firm believer in the fact that we should stand for our flag, for those, especially on that day, those who have paid a great sacrifice, a great debt. For freedom in that sense. At the end of the service a few days ago, when I was asked to sing God Bless America, I was moved in a very special way when everyone stood once again for God Bless America. Everyone, even both officers, those who have been wounded, they stood for the entire 3.5 minutes of that song. And that was moving to me, that people have enough respect and love for our nation and the flag that flies above that great building to stand for songs that speak of our country.
Nathan, I take it that no one in the room, in fact, I was there and I know the answer to this, but I want you to answer it. No one took a knee during the national anthem there in the Mansfield Room on Tuesday, did they?
No, sir, not at all. And, you know, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be there. What a privilege it was to honor those officers.
Well, friends, you've been listening to Nathan Kistler. He's the director of Hope to the Hill. It is our Washington, D.C. ministry arm, part of Hope Ministries International, and this special event on Tuesday honoring Special Agent David Bailey and Special Agent Crystal Greiner, and then again today, Congressman Steve Scalise. Return to the House floor. It was a stirring moment. You need to go back and watch it. When we come back, we're going to shift gears and tell you about an alliance that has formed or is forming that you absolutely must know about. It's tied into all of this kneeling on the football fields. What is that about? You'll find out after this break.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teacher's editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap Today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. Guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information as Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
Hey, I'm Brant. Just read this news item about the two things that are stressing Americans out the most. Thought this was interesting. They say we're losing a record amount of sleep because of these two things. Number one, healthcare expenses. And the second thing, saving for retirement. The two biggest stressors. But what's remarkable? You can make a phone call right now and actually take action on both of these at once. Just call MediShare. MediShare members share each other's medical expenses, and it works beautifully. They've shared over $1 billion in healthcare expenses since 1993. Most members save about $500 a month compared to other healthcare plans. Imagine having a great healthcare plan and adding $500 for your retirement every month. One call, two less things to stress about, and that can help you sleep better at night. Here's the number. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. Now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, on Stand in the Gap Today, we address the real issues of the day, as we say regularly, from the lens of the Bible and the Constitution. We present the good news, and we present the real news, with the goal of informing all the American public, and you, our listeners in particular, about the real issues, and we try to present real solutions. So if you listen to Stand in the Gap Today regularly, you know that we spend a great deal of time on the Middle East, on Israel, of course, and the enemies also of Israel, which more often than not are also the enemies of the United States. There really is no greater enemy at this moment in time, we believe, than the ideology of Islam and its deceptive strategies to destroy the West, to erase Israel from the map, and to take the United States to its knees. And today we're very, very pleased to invite to Stand in the Gap Today a new guest, eminently qualified to speak on all matters related to the Middle East and Islam. His name is Dr. Daniel Pipes. He leads the group Middle East Forum. Dr. Pipes has served in 5 administrations. He has received 2 presidential appointments. He's authored 16 books, and he has an earned PhD from Harvard, having taught as well as at Chicago, Harvard, Pepperdine, the U.S. Naval War College, and regularly writes for the Washington Times. Now, we are trying to get Daniel on the phone right now. He should be with us until he comes here. Dave, I'm going to go to you just briefly because we talked yesterday on this program. We talked about Islam with Dr. Mark Christian. We talked about the fact that it is extraordinarily deceptive. And we tried to link some things together, but just from your perspective, because you do a lot of teaching on this as well. Until Daniel gets with us here, Dave, from your perspective, is Daniel with us here now? Okay, there he is. Dr. Pipes, thank you for being with us today on Stand in the Gap Today.
Thanks for the invitation.
Dr. Pipes, I've already introduced you to our listening audience as being eminently qualified to speak about matters of Middle East, Israel, and Islam, all of the things that we cover regularly on this program. And it's a thrill to have you on. You lead the Middle East Forum. It's an organization that is just doing a tremendous job of getting truth out into a needed area. And I want to go very quickly to you right now, Dr. Pipes, in this regard. Recently, your organization, Middle East Forum, published an article that made a connection that I had not seen before, but I believe it's very critical for our listeners to know about it, and that is the connection between American Islamists as they are turning to and connecting with Ankara, or basically Turkey. Now, We've talked about that a lot on this program, but the rise of Turkey and Tayyip Erdogan within the Islamic terrorist world and the apparent connection that's developing between terrorist organizations and the American Brotherhood organization and now Turkey is disturbing, to say the least. My question to you to start off with is this. To what extent has the relationship between Turkey and American Islamists actually developed, and just how disturbing should it be to every patriotic American?
Well, thank you for inviting me on the program, and I'm glad you're noting the role of Turkey, which historically has not been, like Saudi Arabia, a sponsor of radical Islam, but now very much is. It's wealthy and it's willful. Let me first, before I get into the details, back up one step. You mentioned terrorism. Yes, jihadi violence, blowing things up, ramming people, is a real problem. But in my view, ultimately, it is not the violent form of Islamism, but rather the nonviolent or the legal form, lawful form of Islamism that is most dangerous to us. Yes, individuals we harmed, murdered, but on a larger level, we can defend ourselves, and we are doing quite a good job of that. We have law enforcement, security services, military, who can protect us from violence. What we don't have are equivalent agencies that can protect us from the lawful Islamists who go through the educational system, media, political, legal, philanthropic, and cultural, and so forth, and who are not breaking the law, who are not doing anything wrong in legal terms, but are simply advocating for a very different way of looking at the way we conduct ourselves. So because the way I put it is that the violent Islamists get the headlines, but the lawful ones get the results. So when we turn to Turkey, they're not sponsoring violent movements. That's not their goal. It's not how Erdogan got to power through violence. He got there through democratic means. They are working with lawful Islamist groups. And increasingly, as you correctly noted, the American and other foreign groups outside of Turkey are turning to Ankara for money, for materials, for inspiration. Just last week, Erdogan was in New York for the UN General Assembly, and he addressed ostensibly Turkish group, in effect, was Islamist, and he was in there with them and giving them inspiration. And his thugs, once again, for the fourth time in 6 years, were beating people up because they were dissident. So, yeah, Turkey is now, along with Saudi Arabia and Iran and Qatar, one of the sponsors, funders of Islamism in the United States.
Dr. Pipes, this brewing connection between Turkey and American Islamists raises another important issue, and that is what the Trump administration, before they were in the White House, vowed they would do, and that is label the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. Has this developing relationship with Turkey, does the White House, are they paying attention to that? And does it further not substantiate why the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE as a front organization need to be deemed terrorist organizations?
A lot of politicians, a lot of groups, including my own, have been pursuing this idea of listing the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. I think it's fair to say the effort is defunct. At least that's how we see it. It's not getting anywhere. Trump administration is not doing it. The Congress is not about to pass it. I think in part it's due to the fact that those who were most avid for this are gone from the Trump administration. In part it's due to the complexities that have weighed it down. So that's pretty much dead letter. But there are other campaign promises that are not quite dead letters. One would be extreme vetting, which I think remains a high priority for the Trump administration, but which, in my view, is not being done very competently. The focus has been, these last 8 months, on passports, what your nationality is. It's always about this nationality or that. I don't think that's the key. The way I put it is that we have plenty of enemies in Canada, and we have plenty of friends in Iran. You can't look at a passport. You have to look at the person, at the ideas the person has. And of course, that's a whole lot more difficult than looking at a passport. Complex, expensive, taking more time. But I think real vetting, real extreme vetting, as the president calls it, requires us to study each individual who wants to come into the country, especially someone who's a potential immigrant, And we're not doing that. That's not the focus.
That's very interesting, Dr. Pipe. I think that's a great point on all of these things. We could go much further, but we're not going to have time for that. But I do want to go back to the Middle East, and I want to ask you, is the development, the rise of Turkey and Erdogan, who seems to want to become the leader, perhaps, of worldwide caliphate, how do you see the movement of Turkey away from NATO into the arms of Russia and Iran? How is that complicating and further raising the level of concern, I suppose, for the Middle East and specifically for the nation of Israel?
Well, the great problem within NATO is that Erdogan, by being a willful Islamist, is not only impeding NATO from focusing on the Islamist threat, but actually bending NATO to his will. So NATO, whatever its virtues vis-a-vis Russia, is effectively incompetent and not doing anything vis-a-vis Islamism. So my view is that while Turkey can't be thrown out of NATO, there's no mechanism for that, it should be frozen out and the rest of the coalition should work together against Islamism. As for Israel, the Israelis have a very difficult and complex relationship with the government of Turkey, with Turkey as a country. They, for example, have a flourishing trade, goes up all the time. On the other hand, the Israelis just irritated the Turks by endorsing an independent Kurdistan, and the Turks answered by increasing their support for Hamas. They are antagonists, but they do have common elements still, some 15 years after their alliance effectively came to an end.
Well, that is the most interesting thing. We're watching that. We've talked a lot about even biblical prophecy talks about the alignment of Turkey ultimately with Iran and Russia. So there's a lot of things we cover on here that we watch what's happening there and look at the geopolitical impacts of it. And what you're talking about, I think, is something that is of great notice. Now, we only have just a few seconds left before you go. Your organization, Middle East Forum. Can our listeners go to your website and pick up alerts that you put out and so forth? And if so, could you give them and tell them where to go to do that?
Yes, they sure can. Our website is meforum.org. We're based in Philadelphia, but we're many different places. And if you go there, you'll see how to sign up.
Excellent, excellent. Dr. Daniel Pipe, he leads the Middle East Forum. Thank you for being on with us today. We want to get you back on. Thank you for all the work you do. And ladies and gentlemen, meforum.org. Go there, sign up, get their releases. I do. I enjoy them. It's a lot of information that you'll never find anywhere else, except perhaps here on Staying in a Gap Today. So stay with us as we come right after the break. And Dave Kissler is going to pick this thing back up. And we're going to go into talking about some things relative to taxes, something that you are all very interested in.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. I bet this is a statistic that you have not yet heard. And that is this: the federal government collected record total tax revenues through the first 11 months of fiscal year 2017. And of course, the fiscal year starts October 1st of 2016 and ran through the end of August of this year. And the amount the federal government collected is approximately $2,966,172,000,000 in total tax revenues. And by the way, that is $8,450,680,000 more than the previous record. And of course, I'm drawing these statistics and these numbers from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Now, on the heels of this comes the president's proposal yesterday for tax reform. And if you're just joining us and missed the opening segment, the president has proposed this plan. He's going to simplify the tax code by cutting the number of brackets, tax brackets, that is, from 7 to either 3 or 4. And then his plan also sets the highest tax bracket at 35%, the lowest at 12%. And here is a big one that has attracted a lot of attention since this was rolled out yesterday: the standard deduction, which reduces the overall amount of a person's taxable income, is being doubled. $12,000 for individuals, and $24,000 for married couples. Now, folks, that is huge. That is absolutely huge. Sam, I want to go to you. What are your thoughts early on? And I know you haven't had a lot of time to read all the specifics of the tax plan, and I have not had a chance to delve into it super deep on some of these levels. But what are your thoughts with respect to how beneficial and effective this plan will be for the United States and for the American people if it's passed?
Dave, I think it could have enormous positive impacts economically. There are some of the tax watchdogs folks in D.C. that have already weighed in last night saying that it would be the best thing that has happened since the last tax policy change. But this would be a major one because inherent within this are a couple of things. Number one, reducing the complexity has a psychological effect. It just plain makes sense. So reducing the number of tax brackets, make it less, lowering the top tax bracket puts more money in the economy, takes less out in the form of taxes, and then bringing the bottom up by doubling the exemption from $12,000 to $24,000 for married couples will effectively take an additional segment of people out of paying any tax at all, Dave. Now, in addition to this, which was not mentioned right here, is that the president is recommending that a host of local taxes, local deductions, are also taken out. By doing this, they can take out some of these other things. His goal is that a person, a couple with fairly straightforward taxes, will be able to do it all on one page and do it themselves. Now, that is significant, Dave. So I think that, I think this is a good direction. And, the question is going to be, will the Republican leadership be willing to do that? Because yesterday, as you remember, on Front Page Drudge, we commented on here that the headline was that Republican leadership were talking about tax increases. Well, that's the exact opposite of this, Dave. So I think we have probably not an easy road coming forward, but I think the framework the president has laid out is a good one.
Sam, I do too. I just don't know how it's going to be possible for the Republicans to fight him on this, significantly fight him. I mean, he's laid this out. This makes sense to anybody that understands, really anything with respect to numbers and finance. When you start talking about doubling the exemption to $24,000 for a married couple, I don't know how you can fight against that. That obviously is going to have great benefit. However, Chuck Schumer has already stated and used this worn-out statement that is used always by the Democrats, and that is this: this is nothing more than an attempt to give a tax break to the wealthy. Isaac, let me ask you, from your perspective, do you think the American people are smarter than to buy into this tired, worn-out lie that this is a Republican president trying to help the wealthy? And I ask that in light of what happened in Alabama. The people of Alabama didn't buy into a lot of the hype and the $30 million that was poured into their state to help Luther Strange win. They supported a man they know, and that's Judge Roy Moore, a man they love. So a lot of times we don't give the American people maybe as much credit as we should give them. Do you think the American people are going to buy into the lies the Democrats are going to try to sell with respect to tax policy or this plan by the president? Or do you think they will succeed in their lies?
Dave, I think you're right. I think the American people see through this. The people I know, hardworking people in my area, they're not looking for a handout. They're looking for a fair shake and for a fair, opportunity. And I know so many farmers in my church and in my community and small business guys. I have a friend about my age in my church who he had to give up his construction business because of the taxes and because of the complications of it and try to switch gears. And so, yeah, this is going to be well received, I believe, by most, because so many people are working with small businesses. Some of the big unions and people like that might try to go against it. But I think the majority of Americans are smart enough to see how this will help. And as Sam said, it will really, really boost the economy.
Well, I agree. And I just left a restaurant prior to coming to the program. It's a small business. And I was talking to the owner, and we were talking about this tax proposal. As much as he understands what the president laid out, he said, I can't see how this could be anything but good for the individual taxpayer as well as for the small business owner. Sam, let me ask you this. It appears as if health care repeal and any accompanying replacement is now destined to be resolved, or at least attempt to be resolved, next year. And now all the focus is on this tax plan. What do you think, as one who has served in the Pennsylvania legislature, how these things work and how they work their way through a legislative body. What are the chances, in your estimation, that this tax bill will pass? And should it fail, heaven forbid, should it fail, what would be the political price for not getting this tax bill through, both to the president and to the GOP-controlled Congress?
Well, I think I'm going to back up and answer your last question first. The impact of the president has established himself very clearly on what his goals are. I believe the people of America have been convinced he has, in fact, tried to work as hard as he could on the Obamacare repeal and now on this tax effort. If he is thwarted in that effort, having once done so on Obamacare repeal, that responsibility lies flat, unfortunately, on the doorsteps of Republican leadership. The Democrats are opposed to it, but they've always been opposed to any kind of a repeal. That's clear. But the Republicans in leadership have failed to deliver, and you've got a few of these obstinate members like John McCain and a few of these other folks that are sticking around, Susan Collins and others, that have decided to jump ship. The Republicans at large will bear a heavy price tag, I believe, if they don't turn around and deliver something on this matter of tax reform, at least. But I think the president has kept himself away. No one can say he has not tried. And Dave, if I could just take an opportunity, just put it in right now. When we talk about Obamacare, in that case, not being repealed, what's going to happen? I think it's going to come back that, as the president said, if you don't repeal it, then the whole thing is going to collapse the system, and we're going to have to come up and pick up the pieces. That's a bad way to go. I mean, he may have been speaking prophetically because perhaps he knew they wouldn't do it. I don't know. But that's the track that we are on. And I would say for our listeners right now, we carry MediShare announcements on this program. That's an alternative. Dave, I believe healthcare alternatives, particularly for Christians who live clean lives, which is really what MediShare is all about, they ought to go and check on that, because I believe that this is going to increase their need even more so. As you've heard, ladies and gentlemen, 844-45-BIBLE is what you ought to call. Check it out. You may not have checked it out before, but check it out again. But, Dave, I think they're going to be augmented because of Congress's failure to pass the repeal.
Well, Sam, I'm going to hitchhike off of what you just said, and I'm going to put this little plug in. The concept behind MediShare is precisely the format that my wife and I use, and I will say this, it has been absolutely outstanding. And so I would encourage you, friends, do precisely what Sam has encouraged you to do. We don't know where all this is going to go, and if it were to collapse, then something like MediShare and that concept may be the only thing that stands up and stays in place in the midst of great confusion within the healthcare system. So take a look at it. Sam, give that number again, if you would, please.
That number, Dave, is 844-45-BIBLE. 844-45-BIBLE.
Sam, I'm going to go back and ask you this before we go into the break. I don't want to let you off. What are the chances? Give me a percentage that you think this tax bill will pass, this reform bill that the president's proposed.
I would say, this is just my guess, I think there's probably a 70% chance that it will pass. 70%. I don't know why I'm saying that, because I don't think it's a fait accompli. I don't think it's a guarantee. I think the pressure is going to be on Republican leadership that they'd better produce on this one, or they're in big trouble. So I think their incentive is higher, and they're hoping that people would forget they didn't repeal Obamacare. And I think the Democrats, there's enough opportunity for negotiations in this bill that you probably will pick up a few of them.
Isaac, let me ask you this before we go to the break. Well, we're not going to have time for me to ask it, but I'll ask you privately, because I'm interested in what you think from a millennial pastor perspective. Well, friends, when we come back from the break, we're going to go into our solutions segment, and we want to talk about something that really is outside the realm of tax reform. It is outside the realm of repeal and replacement of Obamacare, but it's a stunning set of statistics. In fact, I could not believe there was a decline in these numbers that we have seen from 1 year ago. What am I talking about? Well, friends, you're going to be amazed when we bring it up in the final segment. So I'm encouraging you to join us after this brief timeout for the answer to this question.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. Now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, you'd have to have your head buried in the sand not to be aware of all that's been going on with respect to the national anthem and to the flag. Those that have been taking a knee within the National Football League has dramatically increased. Well, yesterday, Fox News released the findings of its latest poll, and in that poll, it said the American people believe by 55% that kneeling during the national anthem is an inappropriate form of protest. Now, you may think, well, that's great. 55% of the American voting public believes that that is inappropriate. Well, here's the problem. That is down 6 percentage points from 61% of the American voting public who felt that way 1 year ago. Last evening after church, there was a gentleman who came up to me to remind me of this fact. He said, Dave, do you remember in the 1992 Summer Olympics, it was the first time that there was professional players that played in the Summer Olympic basketball competition, and they called that team the Dream Team. That was the team made up of Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and other NBA players. And he said, do you remember how proudly those professional athletes wore the red, white, and blue, even standing at attention with their hand over their hearts during the playing of the national anthem? And I said, yes, I do remember that vividly. And then, of course, his comment was, how far have we come since 1992, where that was the expectation, that was the norm, to stand with your hand over your heart as a professional athlete. And now here we are these many years later with athletes protesting. Now, tomorrow we're going to have on the program a gentleman who has been for 30 plus years, part of the Islamic faith, the Islamic religion. And he's going to share with us how this kneeling at football games, professional football games, ties into something that most people don't think about. In fact, even our guest today, Dr. Daniel Pipes, did not address this specifically, but what he talked about factors into the mix as well. I don't want you to miss the program tomorrow. It's going to be very, very interesting. No one is bringing this element in, but it's part of what's taking place in the National Football League, and you need to hear about it. Sam, my question to you is this. What do you believe are the reasons behind the dramatic decline in what I believe is fitting and appropriate patriotism? And beyond that, we're watching the outright demeaning of our nation and its symbols. Without going into where you know we're going to go tomorrow, what is really driving a lot of this, in your opinion?
Dave, I think broadly it comes from two aspects of it. There's a change in overall ideology. When I'm talking about that, I'm saying that this nation was founded on a Judeo-Christian ideology. It undergirds everything about what we see in government. It's why there are Bible verses placed on the walls of government buildings. It's why our founding fathers were so dependent upon God. It's why we, even back in 53, put "In God We Trust" on coins. David, all of these things was a part of a mentality that was in and woven in and throughout our culture. But from the middle of the last century on, things began to change. We began to walk away from God. We began to have actual purposeful infiltration into public education by Marxists who chose to weave out and cut out the linkage to our foundation and to our beginning, and to weave into that this global mentality, the United Nations mentality, the globalism mentality of the day, which says the nation as a whole is not important. It's this world government that we're a part of. Dave, it's been finding its way in like termites into public education. And the church, I believe, as a whole, has not been bearing down on the biblical context of nationhood and why it's important. As a result, we're finding ourselves waking up and saying, yeah, the United States, well, what's the difference about that and somebody else? That's them, that's us, everything's equal. David, there's been a lot of factors coming together, plus some other things I'm not talking about that I think more purposely factor in now. But these things are coming together, and we've just been separated from our heritage.
Isaac, yesterday off air, you posed a great question to Sam and to me, and the question you posed was this: why don't these NFL players boycott the game rather than the flag and the national anthem? And that is a great question and a great point. And then yesterday on the program, Dr. Mark Christian commented that they started, and they refers to those on the left and those that are anti-American, anti-patriotic, they started with Confederate symbols, and now they're moving to the unifying symbols, those things around which all Americans unify and unite, speaking of the flag and our national anthem. Without, again, Isaac, going into what we're going to talk about tomorrow, why do you think it's the flag that's the target and it's the national anthem that's the target rather than the game being boycotted?
I think there's a lot of cowardice on their part, you know, because if you sit out for half of the game to prove your point, then you lose money. And they're charging, you know, sometimes $100 for the cheapest seat at these stadiums. I just heard on local radio today that stadiums are charging $40 to even $100 just to park your vehicle. And so they're making just lots and lots of money off of this, and they're claiming that they're against America, against the president, against really the people who voted for a president like Donald Trump. And so if they're trying to get back at the people of America, you don't do it by attacking the symbolism. You should do it by attacking the system that allows for that. And so sit out part of the game, but they won't, because that will affect their pocketbook. It was mentioned on some of our stations, one of the commercials, about getting on the bandwagon. I think these people just don't understand. They don't understand what reality is. They're so far removed from it. I think our educational system and our media system, it's just an unrealistic expectation. They don't realize that they're pawns in the hand of something bigger.
Isaac, you couldn't have said it any better. Pawns in the hands of something bigger. And friends, again, I want to implore you to be with us tomorrow. We're going to have as our guest a man who's going to uncover something that is part of this something bigger component to what is taking place with respect to the National Football League and all that's going on with respect to protesting the flag and the national anthem. Sam, I know we've got just about a minute and a half until we're going to have to move out of this final segment. I want to ask you a question, and then I want to ask you at the end of your answer to lead us in prayer. How do we change this declining, appropriate love of country? I mean, we're seeing a decline in that. How do we change it? How does the NFL, even if they're interested in doing so, how do they change that? And how does the American home, and perhaps the Church of Jesus Christ, how do we go about changing this?
Ha, Dave, that's a big schedule. What's required is those who are a part of that game, they need to stand up and not kowtow and bow to those who will not stand. That means coaches, and that means the other players. So they've got to stand up. So anybody who understands the issue must stand now. And when it comes to the basic underlying part of why should we be patriotic, is that a biblical thing? That comes from the pulpit. The answer is yes, we should. Because that's within the pages of Scripture of nationhood and why we honor those who are in authority. All of those kinds of things, it goes together. So, Dave, there is a biblical component. There's an educational component. And as far as people listening, ladies and gentlemen, talk about the love of country. Talk about the love of God and what He's done for our country. That will produce a thankfulness to God and an appreciation for what He's done for our country. And that produces patriotism. Heavenly Father, we are thankful to you for being able to be on this program today. We thank you for all that you've done for this nation. And we would ask, O Lord, that in every person who is listening, that we would look within and we would say, how can we stand and voice our opinion, voice the matter of truth to those around us in these days when the fundamental values of who God is, what this nation is, and our biblical heritage is all about is under attack. Let us stand now, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Sam, thank you. Isaac, thank you for being aboard. Dr. Mark Pipes, thank you as well. Friends, I want to encourage you to do something. Display the American flag outside your house. Pastor, don't take the American flag off your platform in your church. Keep it there. Talk about the connection of that flag to God's blessing on this country. And then, friends, join us tomorrow for one of the most important programs we've ever conducted.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.